Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and my goodness, it is Friday. And we're going to have a wonderful topic to share with you today. If you're a person that sometimes has felt as if you have not been blessed with a physical body, that when you look at somebody else on television, you look at them and you go, oh, wow, I wish I were like that. And then you turn around and look at yourself in the mirror and you go, yuck. How come I ended up with this baggage? Well, we're going to be talking about a subject matter, and I don't care whether you're male or female, how if you love your body, you're going to love your life. After all, this is the chassis you've got, so why not appreciate it? My guest, Sarah Maria, she has 5 steps that she's going to share with us so that we can start thinking about our bodies with respect, appreciation, and even affection. This is Sarah. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Now, Sarah, you actually founded a business, Break Free Beauty, so that people would appreciate their physical self. And you talk all over the place, and you have been involved with Deepak Chopra, Dr. David Simon. Why was this so important to you? I mean, a lot of people would say, this sounds a little bit narcissistic to love your body. Why in the world did you feel that this was something you wanted to commit yourself to so that other people's lives could be better because of it?
Well, it really came out of my own struggle and healing, and I spent many years of my life struggling with what I call negative body obsession, which is, for me, was an obsession with being thin, but it could be an obsession of any type. It could be, you know, being obsessed about, you know, not being young enough, not being tall enough, not being thin enough, being not muscular enough, or whatever it is for you. For me, it was an obsession with being thin. It turned into, you know, anorexia, bulimia, compulsive eating, very compulsive relationship with food in my body. And that led me to, I mean, it was a very difficult time. It consumed much of my energy, and I was forced, really, to find a way to heal and find a way to break free. And when I did, I was able to create a life with much more beauty, much more love than I ever imagined was possible, and really wanted to help other people alleviate the pain and the challenge, help them break free from negative body obsession. So I wrote a book and started my business. I coach clients and work with people designed to do exactly that, help people to break free.
You use the abbreviation NBO, so we'll do the same thing here. You have some questions that you usually ask people to determine if they do have a negative body obsession. What are those questions?
Well, it's really, you know, helping people to identify any negative thoughts, beliefs, attitudes, feelings, behaviors that they have about themselves and toward themselves and their bodies. So it's a process of cultivating awareness, of helping people to become aware of the negative thoughts that they think about themselves on a regular basis.
You have a very nice statement right at the very front of your book. You said that, and this was a dedication to every woman who has ever felt she's not beautiful enough, and to every man who's never felt he's not strong enough. May you discover your beauty, may you revel in your glory, may you uncover your vitality, may you rejoice in your divinity, knowing always that at your essence, you are love. I really like those words. Now, NBO, you feel, is based in fear. When you look back on your personal experience with anorexia, and so many young women, especially. The guys seem to be smart enough not to do this in general. Mostly it's the young women. What kind of fears contribute to this?
Well, there's a lot of reasons, and it actually is a growing issue for men as well, sadly enough.
Really?
Uh-huh. It is. I mean, anorexia is, and negative body obsession is very much an issue for men. I work with men, that struggle with it, and it's particularly difficult for men because they think they shouldn't struggle with it because it's a quote-unquote woman's issue. But in the cases of, in the case of anorexia or bulimia, what causes it can be a number of things. There's usually, when young women develop it, let's say in high school, it usually has its roots in some low self-esteem, lack of, self-worth, lack of confidence, a desire to control if they've been subject to trauma. Many women who develop eating disorders have undergone some type of sexual or physical abuse. So it so undermines, it's young children, their sense of well-being, their sense of safety in the world is dramatically undermined because of abuse, and then they turn to food, controlling food, either overeating, undereating as a way to deal with that. Self-hatred also gets wrapped up into it, and that self-hatred, again, usually comes from not having the positive reinforcement as children about their inherent lovability, their inherent value.
When you're talking about this, there is a mind-body connection, and you have a section in your book about the brain. And you made a comment that the brain actually has a big effect, obviously, because that's what we use as our thinking machine, that there are sort of programs in the brain that are already there, but a lot of it has to do with media, a lot of it has to do with social expectation, and I don't know of any culture that doesn't have that. How can we get past that?
Well, it's really, I think every child gets born into a society, into a culture, and then through parents, teachers, media, etc., begin to internalize the beliefs of the culture. And in order to get past that, it really requires that you place your sense of self, your sense of value, your sense of finding your worth inside yourself, right, that you are going to find it within instead of looking to the society to reinforce or affirm. Because if you look to the society, if you look to the culture, then you are going to do what the culture says is reasonable to do. And it's only when you say, no, wait a second, I am not going to do that. I'm not going to continue to do that. I want to find, I know that I'm inherently beautiful, and I, regardless of what the culture says is beautiful, I know that I'm inherently beautiful. That's the starting ground for breaking free from all the conditioning that you've been given.
You have a chapter on intention, because you make a statement in your book that if you have a vision of really where you want to be, you are going to be able to achieve that if you so desire. But there is a lot that has to do with intention. There are so many people going through the holiday season. It's notorious, all the goodies that we get, and it's so easy to put on an extra pound here, an extra pound there. And usually by the time the holidays are over, then all of a sudden all the gyms get booked out and people find out about all these different diets they're going to try. How can we set intentions so, regardless of the time of year, that we're not going to sabotage ourselves?
Yeah, well, in terms of intention, the best thing to do for the holiday season is, set an intention for what you want. For example, if you're looking to get through the holiday season without overindulging, set an intention to really listen to your body, to, engage in moderate, have moderate kind of treats or whatever you consider, if you want a special, if you eat special things during the holidays, set an intention for moderation and for really listening to your body.
Now, you have your five steps in here, and step one is doing exactly what you have just mentioned, and that's setting a powerful intention. And in that chapter, you have a question that someone needs to ask themselves, and I thought this was a good question. What are you fighting against in your life right now? Because often food is an emotional release. We'll go for that extra donut or cookie or whatever might happen to be around. Again, because it's the holiday season. What do we need to be able, that's a good question to ask. What do we need to be able to do to hear the answer to the question?
In terms of what are you fighting against in your life
mm-hmm.
right now? Yeah,
yeah,
well, in step number three, I say discover who you really are, and I talk about the practice of meditation. And the more you can simply quiet, right, simply sit down, close your eyes, and look within. Most people spend their whole lives looking outside of themselves. So when you can look within, right, then you'll begin to see what you're fighting against. It's always there. It's simply being able to stop engaging in whatever you're fighting against long enough to see what it is.
You have an exercise in the book that I think is a good one, and that's one of writing letters. Is this something you did for yourself to help you get past the anorexia patterning that you found yourself so entrenched within?
Well, by the time I did letter writing, I was beyond anorexia. It had been many years. It had turned into bulimia, then into compulsive eating. And but yes, I did do the letter writing. And when I did it, what it really helped me to break free from was the destructive beliefs, the destructive attitudes that were still inherent, you know, that were still in my psyche and that were the sort of initial cause of the anorexia and of the whole problem.
Now, that's basically part of step number two, and I think your suggestions are a very, very good one there. In step number three, you say you should have an ideal life and you need to discover who you really are. I think that's one of the greatest challenges anyone ever has to deal with, because so often people say, I honestly don't know who I am. How would you ask someone to put together an image of what their ideal life would be? What would you say to that person?
You know, it's to go within, right? Find out, ask yourself, what are my goals? What are my dreams? What are my visions? What are my hopes? What are my longings? What are my aspirations? Where is my heart calling me? And that's your first step, because, again, when you grow up, most people have ideas for their life based on what other people think, right? What their parents want for them, what society says is reasonable, whatever they've been told is a good idea. So really going within and finding out for yourself what you want. And the best way to do that is to, again, quiet your mind and begin to listen to your heart.
You have a lovely poem in here that's titled, We've Not Come Here to Take Prisoners. And I want to share it because I think it's very poignant. We have not come here to take prisoners, but to surrender ever more deeply to freedom and joy. We have not come into this exquisite world to hold ourselves hostage from love. Run, my dear, from anything that may not strengthen your precious budding wings. Run like hell, my dear, from anyone likely to put a sharp knife into the sacred, tender vision of your beautiful heart. We have a duty to befriend these aspects of obedience that stand outside of our house and shout to our reason, oh, please, come out and play. For we have not come here to take prisoners or to confine our wondrous spirits, but to experience ever and ever more deeply our divine courage, freedom, and light. Huffitz wrote that poem, and I really think it's true. And part of that step in a section that you talk about, you say we need to remember how amazing we really are. And you have some wonderful affirmations also in your book. Now, befriending the body. And it is something that many times people will look at their bodies and say, the body is my enemy, when it really is a miraculous living machine. That's how I describe it. And you give some wonderful points in here about the body, how the body replaces 98% of its atoms in less than 1 year. We get a new liver every 6 weeks. We create a new skeleton every 3 months, a new stomach lining every 5 days. New skin is generated every month. And the cells in your brain weren't there last year. Even your DNA as raw material did not exist 6 weeks ago. That is incredible knowledge about the human body.
It is. And what I like to say is, you know, your body is really your very best friend. Most people in today's culture have this idea that the body is somehow an enemy, that the body, you know, oh, my body never loses weight, or my metabolism's so slow, it ages, etc. We think our body is somehow out to get us, and in fact, nothing could be further from the truth, because from the moment of your conception until the moment of your passing, your body knows exactly what to do on its own. Your body orchestrates, developed you from one cell to a fetus, to a toddler, to a child, to an adolescent, to an adult, all of it being orchestrated without your even having to think about it. Your heartbeat, every heartbeat, you know, happens on its own. Every time you blink, happens on its own. And really understanding that your body is your very best friend. It has one agenda and one agenda only, and that is to promote your well-being. So if you can make that one shift, it has profound consequences, because you spent all this time hating your body, and now you realize that your body is your very best friend. It's a complete reorientation.
In this chapter of befriending the body, which is step number 4 of the 5 that you bring out in a great deal of detail, not only do you talk about the body and its benefits, but you also talk about the aspect of healing. You talk about visualization. You talk about a number of things. Why did you bring that particular aspect into this? Because you really went into quite a bit of detail about not only being able to heal ourselves, but also others. Why was that important to you to include in this chapter?
Yeah, well, for many people who struggle with negative body obsession, there's often health issues intertwined with that, you know, and that especially if you've had eating disorders, it can have very serious health consequences. So that was the reason that really it's realizing that when you learn to be grateful for your body, relate to your body with love and gratitude instead of with hatred and frustration and irritation, that you really do release a profound healing ability within your body to heal itself.
Step number 5 is living your purpose, and you have a number of variables in step 5 that you bring out. You ask the question, does one suffer from a sense of meaninglessness? And that is a significant word, because we're dealing with, again, the NBO, the negative body obsession. When you're dealing with that, often individuals have no concept. They're really not grounded in what would be considered the true sense, because their belief systems have taken them off on a tangent that is not going to be very supportive. It's actually going to be very destructive to them, whether they're overeating, undereating, overexercising, you know, whatever it might be. They are not respecting themselves and their physical well-being, this wonderful body chassis that we have, that we have to go through life with. Some of the people that you've dealt with that have had these feelings, what's been your most dramatic case that you dealt with?
The most dramatic case of
NBO.
Oh my goodness. There's been a lot of them, everywhere from, you know, a woman who has been, you know, dealt with anorexia, was severely underweight for the vast majority of her life, many, many health problems from it, and helping her to, you know, escape from that prison, to, you know, a woman who is very, very overweight, and ever since she was a young child, kind of thought of herself as a blob of fat with eyes, and, you know, helping her break free from that illusion.
Your word illusion, that's a key, isn't it? The illusions that you buy into.
Because in reality, we are inherently beautiful. Our bodies are inherently perfect. It's part of, we are part of, you know, our bodies are a creation of the universe and really are perfect. That is not to say if you want to lose your weight or get healthier, of course, that's a possible. In the book, I talk at length about that. But this idea that somehow you are fundamentally flawed, that somehow your body is wrong, that your body is either too fat or too thin, etc., that your body somehow needs to be different than how it is in order for you to be worthwhile, that is not true.
You make a statement in your book, you are responsible for your self-esteem and self-respect, and that's very true. Is it difficult to work with some people who don't have a level of self-esteem and self-respect to hear you when you are wanting to communicate with them about the need of changing their self-image? And what do you feel is important as a first step to be able to speak out about this to someone?
No, you know, the only first step is willingness. It's only that someone is willing to begin to disengage from their destructive patterns and behaviors. That's the only first ingredient is willingness. They don't need to know how, because if they already knew how, they'd be doing it. Just being willing to find help, be willing to get help, be willing to improve their lives. That's the only prerequisite.
I liked the statement you made in your book where you said, if you have a partner who will not love you for who you truly are, then you need to take the risk of finding another partner who will cherish you as you are right now. And I'll share with you a story of a woman that I knew a few years ago. And she was about 5'6", and she had to have weighed about 350 pounds. This woman just had so many issues, and she was so miserable because of this tremendous amount of weight she was carrying. Yet her husband just loved her for who she was. He didn't care. And she said that sometimes was very frustrating to her because she knew that he loved her, but she did not really love herself. She did not know how to really make it okay that if she was that way, okay, that's fine. But for health purposes, she could make some changes. But she was frightened. She really was frightened, I think, to discover that person that was very slender, that would be very comfortable in her own body. What would you say to someone that was actually afraid of becoming that person that they so earnestly, sincerely believe they want to be?
I'm confused. So you say in the story you told, she was afraid she wasn't able to love herself, and that's very common. That you know, it kind of, if you're not able to love yourself, it doesn't really matter how much somebody else loves you, because it won't alleviate that sense of inadequacy that you feel because you don't love yourself. Now, the second part of that question, can you run that by me again? I think I missed it.
What would you say to this person who would be afraid of that thinner self?
Oh, I see. Yeah, you know, there's inherently, there is fear any time you look at changing anything, and knowing that and seeing the fear and doing it anyway. You know, if you have enough of an intuitive sense, all right, if I lose weight, I'm going to feel better, I'm going to be healthier, I'm going to be easier in my body, then it's natural to feel fear, and you also need to be willing to move forward anyway.
So dump the fear and do it anyway.
Yes.
This is something I feel that is so very, very important, and I'd hope that you'd be able to get out to some of the schools talking to young men and women and making them aware of how precious the body really is. And when you take care of it, it will serve you well. We're seeing so many good examples in today's world because we do have the opportunity to get better nutrition. We have food supplements. We understand how important it is to exercise. And I'm seeing people in their 80s that look like they're in their 50s. And you go, my goodness, it wasn't that way 30 years ago. But by golly, it is today. You look at some of the old movies and it's unbelievable. But we do have to take care of it and being able to nurture that part of ourselves, understand how valuable the body really is and take care of it can really make a turnaround in your life. You'll be able to be productive whether you are 22 or 202. It won't make any difference. You'll have a life that's going to be full and rich because of the care you give your body. Sarah, before we close out, is there a thought you would like to leave with my audience? Oh, and by the way, what's your website that people can go to?
Website is breakfreebeauty.com. It's BREAKFREEBEAUTY, breakfreebeauty.com. You can learn about my courses, coaching, upcoming events. I include articles, lots of great information. When you sign up for the e-zine, it's completely free. You can sign up on the homepage, upper right-hand corner, breakfreebeauty.com. The book is Love Your Body, Love Your Life. You can purchase it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders. Love Your Body, Love Your Life. And so breakfreebeauty.com, Love Your Body, Love Your Life. If there's only one thing that you remember from this whole discussion, it is that you are inherently beautiful, you are inherently worthwhile, you are inherently lovable. And when you totally get that, when you totally understand that, you can let go of every thought, every belief, every idea that runs contrary to that and begin to discover the perfection that you are.
Well said. Love your body, love your life. Go to her website, breakfreebeauty.com. And if you know of a young person that is going through all kinds of anxiousness about themselves, I don't know of any young person that doesn't feel like they're either too short, too tall, because they're in the process of growing, and it's very irritating because we don't get our bodies exactly the way we think that they should be. But to be able to be accepting of ourselves is so important, and I think Sarah Maria's book goes a long way to helping those that may want to have that kind of help appreciate the physical vehicle that they have so that their life can be richer. It helps with self-esteem and in so many other ways. Again, Sarah Maria, thank you so much for being my guest today. For those of you listening, we're going to be taking a break. I've got some good things to share with you today, and we're going to do that right now. Again, Sarah, thank you so much for being my
guest. Absolutely my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back right after this.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAP. TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are open, and if you'd like to give me a buzz, I'll be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. And again, that's 888-815-9756. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, just sit back, relax, and of course, I always like to know where you're calling from. And then I will be delighted to give you my perspectives, my insights that I feel you might be interested in knowing about. So again, 888-815-9756. Now next week, I want to let you know, it is Christmas week next week, but that's okay. We're going to be talking about the Complete Guide to Holistic Cat Care with Celeste Yarnall. And I want you to know that this is, if you love cats, this book is so well done. This woman breeds cats and she talks about food for them and, oh, just all kinds of wonderful things. You know, I've been getting so much material about animals, and there have been some real issues regarding the breeding of animals and how in many breeds, just like my little Scottish Terriers, you know, it used to be, Scotties used to live to be about 14 or 15 years old. Well, now the average age for a Scottie can be anywhere from 8 to 10 and a half years old. Why? Because apparently there are some real health issues that have developed because of inbreeding. So things like this, the more we become educated, the more we become aware of how to take care of ourselves. You know, the first part of the show was how to appreciate ourselves, appreciate our bodies. Well, animals, we have to think of them in the same way, especially if they're domesticated. So we're going to be talking about cats on Monday. And then, if you're one of these people, my goodness, in the holiday season, maybe you're just so stressed, you just are not able to get a good night's sleep. Well, we're going to be talking about how you can have a restful insomnia with Sandra Kornblatt, and then instant healing. Barbara Semple is a woman that is going to be sharing with us some very, very good techniques and insights regarding that. And then, of course, Thursday is going to be the day before Christmas, so I'm going to be sharing Christmas stories with you and all kinds of good things. And then on Christmas Day, we'll be playing my holiday traditional program, where there's stories being told, and if you wanted to turn it on in the background, and if you were busy with holiday events or whatever, just turn it on and you can listen to it. But I, like you, will be spending time with my family and friends on Christmas Day. And then after that, on the 28th of December, we're going to be talking with Amy and Monty Farber. They're in New York. These people have got the most wonderful items. We're going to be talking about tarot cards. We're going to be talking about a feng shui type of program that they've got. There's just so many interesting things. It's a great way to start off a new year, and that's just around the corner. We're not that far away from it. So we're going to be talking with Amy and Monty, and then The Bridge Between, Dan Millman. We're going to be discussing psychic things, psychic occurrences, true stories about people, and then the A to Z Guide to Healing Foods with Elise Collins. And, oh, we've just got so many wonderful people that it's just, again, you'll hear me say this so frequently, it's just a joy for me to be able to have the material come into my office where I'm able to review it, and there's just all of these talented people out in the world. And I know you're the same way, that you love hearing about good things, because so often what we get is so much garbage. If you go through and you listen to most of the programming, the news programming, etc., I'm not saying all, but most of it, if you're like I am, afterwards you sort of feel like you've just been run over by a Mack truck. It's very oppressive. Now, it's important to stay informed. It's important to be alert. But it's also important to remember that what you put into your mind makes a great deal of difference in how you cope with the challenges of life. So it's important to remember an old adage, garbage in, garbage out. If you get caught up in fear, if you get caught up in the attitudes of lack on many different levels, you're going to get stuck in the same stuff that other people are getting stuck in, and then you have one big mucky mess. So we have to come full circle. We have to take responsibility for what we bring into our lives, for how we act in our lives. We have to acknowledge that we have choice. So it's where you put your mind and your actions to be sure that you get the results that you really want. We're going to have some awesome, awesome guests coming up on the show. People from around the world who have stories to share and tales to tell that it's almost as if it would be unbelievable, but they are believable. Again, that's one of the reasons I love to do the show. I want to thank Gail for sending me this story. I thought it was really appropriate. She said, I bet you didn't see this in the newspaper or on the 6 o'clock news when it happened. And she sent me the picture of a very handsome young man. He was a sailor. He was a Navy Petty Officer PO2, which is a Petty Officer Second Class. He also was an EOD2, which is an Explosive Ordnance Disposal Second Class. His name was Mike Monsor. On the 5th of April in 1981, he was born, and he died in September, the 29th, in fact, of September in 2006. Now, the story is about this young man. Mike Monsor was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor for giving his life in Iraq as he jumped on and covered with his body a live hand grenade. Now, this grenade had been dropped accidentally by a Navy SEAL. He ended up saving the lives of a very large group of Navy SEALs that was passing by. Now, at his funeral, which was held at Fort Rosecrans National Cemetery in San Diego, California, there were 6 pallbearers, who removed the rosewood casket from the hearse and lined up on each side of this young man's casket. There were also his family members that were in attendance, friends, fellow sailors, and well-wishers. There was a column of people that came from the hearse all the way to the gravesite. What the group that was attending the funeral did not know at the time was that every Navy SEAL, 45 to be exact, that Mike Monsor saved that day was scattered throughout this column that was coming from the hearse, going to the grave. As the pallbearers carried the rosewood casket down to the column of people at the graveside, the column would collapse and then formed a group of people that followed behind. Every time the rosewood casket would pass a Navy SEAL, he would remove his gold trident pin from his uniform and slap it down hard, causing the gold trident pinto ebbed itself right into the top of the wooden casket. Then the Navy SEAL would step back from the column and salute the casket. Now, the person that put this information together said, if you don't know what a trident pin is, he said, I didn't, or what it looks like. They sent a photo, and obviously I can't show the photo to you being on the air, but they said, after one completes a basic Navy SEAL program, which lasts for 3 weeks, there is a SEAL qualification training, and there's 15 more weeks of intensive training, which, believe me, is exceedingly rigorous. And it's necessary because they have to constantly improve their skills, and they have to learn new tactics and techniques. This is all required when you want to get an assignment to a Navy SEAL platoon. After you successfully complete what's required, the trainees are given their Naval Enlisted Code and are awarded the Navy SEAL Trident pin. With this pin, it is known that they are now officially Navy SEALs. At this funeral for this young man, it was said that you could hear each of the 45 slaps of that pin onto the casket from across the cemetery. By the time the rosewood casket reached the gravesite, it looked as if it had a gold inlay from the 45 trident pins that lined the top. And I have a photo of it in front of me, and it is amazing. They said, this should have been front page news. However, listen to what we have on the news on a daily basis and what we see every day. This is an idea that I have. Since mainstream media won't make this news, then if you will, why don't you pass it on? We should be proud of the branches of our military, and if you're proud too, then share this with others. And I thought that's what I would do with you today. I think so many times there are circumstances we will never hear about. But that is one of the wonderful things about what we have today in the way of technology. We're able to pass information around and share it with people so that we can make a statement and we can be heard. If you go back into history, sometimes when a letter was sent from point A to point B, it could be years before the person that was to get it had it. Documents would be lost. It was just horrific. It was really a tragedy. That wasn't so long ago that we did not even have cell phones. Today, we're able to communicate around the world, just like being on the air today. Anywhere in the world, this show can be heard, and that is wonderful. With that does come, I think, so much freedom, and we need to remember that that is very precious, and we should take care of it. It is something we need to honor and respect. So, this was just something I wanted to share, and again, Gail, thank you very much for sending that to me. I've got some fun stories to share with you. I'll probably only have time for one, but if you would like to chat with me today, the telephone number to call in to is 888-815-9756. Now, I've got a Christmas story for you. I know we're going to be taking a break in just a minute, but have you ever heard of Wheels of Fire? Well, in a period of time, the earlier part of the last century, there was an enormous sky wheel that burst into flames over Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. Now that is a lot of space to cover with a wheel of fire. What was it? All people knew is that they could see this tremendously bright, luminous wheel. And it seemed to be the size of a very large table, and it was rolling towards the eastern horizon. Now, you could even hear it. That's right. It seemed to stop for a period of time, and then it would move. Hover in place for a while, and then go away. Now, seldom fire wheels, they're very, very, very rarely seen. And some people have reported that they've actually seen them underwater. The wheel size varies from quite large to over a mile in diameter. And they can change your size. They can get bigger and smaller. Now, there's been hundreds of these sighted. And in 1927, there were men on the USS American that reported sighting phosphorescent clusters of light on the surface of the Andaman Sea. Now, in the beginning, this luminosity was formless and just all over the place. But then it changed. These forms turned into a number of separate wheels with rotating spokes. Those that observed this phenomenon said it lasted 30 seconds, and these fiery wheels would change their spin clockwise to counterclockwise and then clockwise again. They were changing direction every 5 minutes. 1961, Polish results on the Baltic Sea. Vacationers heard the sound of rushing waters, and they watched as a round hill of water was pushed up from beneath the sea, 100 yards out. Then what occurred? There was a belt of steady white light segmented by a number of convex dark streaks. It hovered for about a minute, was up in the air, and then a second glow of light from beneath caused it to move upward at a 45-degree angle and off to the north. It had a dark circular perimeter and a wide, bright ring near the center and 3 triangular spokes. All of this stuff has been documented. Fascinating. I wonder what else is going on. Another phenomena, not unlike the crop circles. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in a minute. If you want to chat, 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. And by the way, if you have a special recipe or a special Christmas story you'd like to share, send it along to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's DelphiInternational.com. And I'll share it on air. And I have been appreciating so very much the different suggestions and little bits of trivia and information that you've been sending. So as I can use it, I will be doing that. I wanted to, let's see, I have something here. Oh, just some little tips because, my goodness, next week is Christmas. And have you ever had a dinner disaster? Oh, I think we could all tell our own horror stories. But I would just say one of the things that can be very frustrating, especially if you've not cooked a turkey in a long time, if you have a problem with a turkey, I found out these little tidbits, and I just wanted to share them with you. If you're having a challenge, if you really want to know how to work with a turkey or the various things you can do, you can call 800-BUTTERBALL. That's right, 800-288-8372. Or you can use a cell phone to text the word turkey to 36888. And this is the Butterball Turkey Talk Line. Yeah, I mean, we've got everything today. So if you need to talk to someone about a turkey, no, I'm not talking about the two-legged kind in the sense of the one without the wings. No, I'm talking about the real turkey that you're going to be serving for dinner. So this is wonderful. You have access to this, and it's so nice to know that you could actually get some good suggestions. And I didn't know that if you have a problem with baking, you can call the Crisco Pie Hotline at 877-4-PIE-TIPS. That's 877-367-7438. And there will be someone, a real human being. Yes, there are those that are available that will actually help you. If you're having a problem fixing pies, pecan, pumpkin, whatever it is that you're putting together, they'll be able to tell you what you can do, and if you've really had a pie disaster, they'll be able to help you fix it. Oh, I can remember one of my biggest disasters. I had this magnificent recipe for a pound cake. I had been invited to this very large party. They knew I was a very good baker, so they invited me to bring the desserts. I had this awesome, awesome pound cake, and I was going to fix this. I did. In fact, I was wanting to be so careful because this is such a large group of people. I wanted it to be so perfect. I did a trial run, made sure that the people that were hosting the party, they liked it, they tasted it, they said, oh, this is wonderful. I go and I fix this pound cake, follow the directions to the perfect degree. We take it over there. It looks beautiful on the plate. It's absolutely gorgeous. They go to serve it for dessert. The whole inside collapsed. Oh, my heart was broken. I'll never forget. I just didn't know what to do. I was so mortified. This gorgeous looking cake. Everybody could hardly wait to get into it. It hadn't cooked on the inside. Don't ask me why. I don't know what happened. The cake gremlins were at it. So I wasn't able to do that. I just was mortified. But you know what? It ended up being a very valuable lesson for me because the hostess said, oh, well, this is interesting. Enough of the cake had cooked, so she said, we'll eat the part that's already cooked, and we'll just put the rest of it in the oven, and we'll bake this up. I mean, we can all talk about horror stories. I was so mortified, absolutely mortified. But it all turned out. You know, everybody had a piece of that cake, and it was delicious, the part that was cooked, that is. So I'm sure you've had one, and if you've had a disaster of your own and want to send me the story, I'd love to hear from you and hear about it. I have a Santa cover-up story that is, this is a true story, by the way, and this is by Missy Smock. She said her brother Paul is one of the kindest people she knows, and Christmas is his favorite time of year. She said the joy of giving seems to envelop him. His spirit just beams as he shares his joys with others. You'd never guess that my brother is Jewish. Now, a number of years ago, two of his best friends gave him a dime store Santa suit. Now, from the very moment he got it, it possessed him. Every Christmas Eve, he'd put on the suit and the cotton beard and the plastic belt, and he'd become transformed into Santa Claus. The first few Christmases, he visited the children's ward and various hospitals, handing out candy canes and just loving the happiness and elation of the children who knew that Santa had found them, even in this unhappy place at the hospital. He would ring his giant set of bells and ho-ho-ho'd his way through the hallways, letting all know that bright eyes and a smile would be expected when he arrived in their rooms. Now, after he had his hospital adventures, he'd go home, he'd be absolutely exhausted, his voice had disappeared, but he was happy. He just was so happy. He just loved playing Santa Claus. And he said nobody will really know about it unless they've actually put on a Santa suit themselves. Well, one year, her brother added an unwed mother's shelter to his list of places to visit, and children would sit upon his lap telling Santa what they hoped would be under the Christmas tree and then pose for a picture as an everlasting moment of their visit with St. Nick. The following Christmas, he visited all of his friends with small children. They would plan it so the children would catch him leaving gifts in their stockings. He'd exchange a few words in his deepest Santa voice, but only a few precious words so as not to give them an inkling they were meeting anyone but the genuine article. To this day, some of the children that saw him still believe in Santa Claus. Now, at the last Christmas he did his Santa suit, a miracle happened. He was driving home from his last delivery, looking forward to spending Christmas Eve curled up in bed with his dogs, watching It's a Wonderful Life, one of his favorite movies. The streets were quiet. There was a choir singing on the radio. And as he came to a stoplight, he noticed a homeless person sleeping on a bench under a few sheets of newspaper. Now, my brother Paul drove fast past this person. He remembered his Santa sack in the trunk of the car, stuffed full of blankets to make it look full. He turned his car around, pulled over, removed the crumpled newspapers from the sleeping man, and replaced them with a nice warm blanket. Missy said, can you imagine walking by and seeing Santa carefully covering up a sleeping man on a bench? Can you imagine an onlooker telling the new blanket owner who had covered him? Paul could only imagine the look on the man's face when he woke up Christmas morning under a brand new blanket. He laughed all the way home. You see, my brother Paul believes there are three ages of a man. When he believes in Santa Claus, when he doesn't believe in Santa Claus, and when he actually is Santa Claus. Missy Smock, thank you so much for your story. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Have a magnificent weekend. Be back with you on Monday, right here, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.